Get the cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belleville.
All right, welcome everyone. It's hour two, Toker Talk Radio. I'm Radical Russ Belleville, coming to you from beautiful, legal Potland, Oregon. Well, we've just returned from the Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference in Portland. A great event. I've got some more speakers and interviews to bring to you for the rest of the week. I just published the photos on my Google Plus page. But now we give you the keynote speech from my congressman, Representative Earl Blumenauer, who spoke Sunday morning at the Hilton in downtown Portland, Oregon.
And one of the people who's been bringing us towards freedom, really more than anybody in this nation, in my opinion, as someone who gets commended for being in the activism scene for cannabis for 16 years, I know we have people who have put in more than two decades, some people more than three decades. Congressman Earl Blumenauer is voting to decriminalize cannabis before I was even born, all the way back in 1973. All right, first state to do it. He is leading the way in the halls of Congress on tax issues, on banking issues, on ending criminal prohibition across the country, expunging criminal offenses for people wrongly persecuted by the war on drugs. In my opinion, the best congressman in the country. Please give a warm welcome to Mr. Congressman Earl Blumenauer.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Anthony. Thank you for the warm welcome early on a Sunday morning, particularly after celebrating last night and a very productive first day for the conference. I appreciate not just your warm welcome, but I appreciate your being on the ground floor of the revolution for sensible marijuana reform. You know, I've been talking to people here in Washington, D.C. and around the country about how the momentum is building and talking about the progress that we are seeing. And a couple of people are, progress, that we're still slugging away. This doesn't seem like it's rocket speed to me. Well, first of all, as you say, having been in this arena for over four decades, what's happened in the last 40 months looks like warp speed to me, particularly when you consider how long it takes to get anything done in Washington, D.C. or on the state level. Part of what we faced immediately after Oregon became the first state to decriminalize marijuana, as we ran into Richard Nixon's misguided, misdirected war on drugs. It was the worst indiscriminate target for that effort. He ignored the advice of his own hand-picked commission headed by Governor Ray Schaefer from Pennsylvania, and started us on a misguided direction in persecuting people for something that humans have used for millennia and was no more dangerous than perfectly legal substances, in fact, less so than tobacco. At some point, people are concerned that there might be some negative consequences for marijuana. Well, there are negative consequences for alcohol, tobacco, riding a motorcycle. Some would say riding a bicycle. There are a host of things that are acceptable in society for adults to choose to do. There may be some who think it would be a better society if all of those potentially dangerous activities, behaviors, were eliminated. But when you think about it, I don't think so. I don't think we'd be better off if we made illegal riding bikes, motorcycles, alcohol, tobacco. That's not the choice that we have made as a free society, usually. You need to get the balance right, and I think we're well on our way to getting the balance right with marijuana policy. But I will say that it took the public to break the paralysis surrounding politicians' timid approaches to this issue, starting in 1996 in California, when the voters decided they were going to legalize medical marijuana. The voters broke through. Likewise, Oregon followed suit. We now have, as you know, 23 states and well over a dozen where some form of medical marijuana is legal. It was the public that led the way, and I think it's appropriate what we've seen more recently dealing with adult use. But we're in the middle of what's going to be a hard and difficult endgame. Some of you are aware that the other side is out again pushing back here in Oregon, throwing dust and misrepresentation. And we're going to see that as a prelude to initiatives that are going to be taken around the country. We're going to have to be vigilant to not let people misrepresent the facts or to think just because we've had some success in our state with Measure 91, with medical marijuana, that we're sort of on autopilot. We're not on autopilot. We've got a lot of hard work ahead of us to make sure that Measure 91 is implemented, keeping faith with the spirit of the drafters, thank you, Anthony, and the voters, and being able to make sure we build on the momentum that's taking place in our nation's capital and in states around the country. We've been, I've been pleasantly surprised with how fast, for congressional terms, we've watched the pieces put together. I had dinner with Barney Frank a couple of weeks ago in Maine, and we were remarking about how these things that we've been working on for years, we've caught the wave, media attention, the industry is organized, the public is aware. It is remarkable. Just the Congress, the previous Congress, we organized sort of the first marijuana working group of members of Congress. We had 17 pieces of legislation that was introduced. We had 6 successful votes on the floor of the House of Representatives moving in the right direction in terms of reining in, signaling the need to rein in federal interference, opportunities for hemp cultivation. This Congress already, we have 15 bills, I think, that have introduced. We've had 4 successful votes on the floor of the House. For the first time in history, we've had legislation introduced in the United States Senate. We've seen successful votes, not yet on the floor of the Senate, but in Senate committees dealing with banking, dealing with something that I feel passionately about, that the federal government shouldn't treat veterans as second-class citizens when it comes to medical marijuana. Some of you know I introduced that legislation last Congress. We forced a vote on the floor of the House, and although we lost by some 17 votes, I was proud of the bipartisan support and the awareness that that represented. And I was also pleased that when we forced a vote again this Congress in a House of Representatives that's much more Republican and Tea Party oriented, we lost by only 3 votes. By only 3 votes. And we had more Republicans voting for us and fewer Democrats voting against us. This momentum that's building is profound. It is profound. We are, in addition to the work on Congress, and we're going to continue working with this administration. It was interesting that the acting head of the DEA actually has acknowledged that marijuana is not as dangerous as heroin. Now again, that's not rocket science. But when you've seen the inability, and I've questioned people before Congress, maybe some of you have seen some of the videos, where they can't answer that simple question, this is progress. Where we've had the administration roll back one of the unnecessary impediments to research for marijuana. I am still hopeful that President Obama, who is the first president in history to both admit that he smoked marijuana as a kid, and he doesn't think it's any dangerous. That administration that has decided that they have bigger fish to fry than interfere with Colorado, Washington, Oregon, Alaska, and Washington, D.C., I'm still hopeful that we'll be able to coax more progress out of them as part of the legacy of this administration. And you should too, looking for ways to reinforce in a positive way, looking for things that are going to make a difference. I'm in the process, as I travel around the country, working on this issue to try and raise the profile, working with people at the national level in my party who are likely to run for Congress. Some of you may have been here in Portland last month when Hillary Clinton acknowledged some of the problems with banking, talked to people individually, understanding that she is sympathetic to the need to have a more rational policy. I've talked extensively with her campaign people. But beyond just the campaigns, I was in New Hampshire last month, where you can't turn around without tripping over a presidential candidate. I mean, you're missing a bet if you don't take advantage of that. You ought to at least have a winter home in New Hampshire. You'll have presidential candidates come up and offer to shovel the snow off your walk or rotate the tires on your car. They're desperate in this little state. And I spent time in New Hampshire. I had an hour-long show on New Hampshire Public Broadcasting talking about rational marijuana policy, had a town hall there, met with state legislators. They're in the process of finally implementing their medical marijuana program that was authorized several years ago, and people are starting to think there about adult use. One of the things at the trip, though, that just really struck me, and I will conclude on this note. I mentioned I had dinner with Barney. And as I was driving from the airport down to his place, I was listening to Maine Public Broadcasting. And they had a story about Portland, Maine, having 12 heroin overdoses that weekend. 2 fatalities for Portland, Maine, which is 1/10 of the size of Portland, Oregon. And I have been struck by how the irrationality of our policies, that we focus on marijuana, which actually should be legal, we pose impediments to medical marijuana, which are unjustified, and we ignore this epidemic of prescription drug overdoses, misuse, pill mills, and then people get when they are unable to feed their painkiller pill habit, they turn to heroin. Well, many of those people in the first place wouldn't have to have opioids if they had freer access to medical marijuana. You know this. I've heard countless stories from people in the industry, from patients, from families of patients who've talked about the difference that this has made, and not the least in terms of dealing with chronic pain. And if we had the opportunity for more, think about the NFL, which is still suspending football players who choose to self-medicate with marijuana because they don't want to be shot up with painkillers or given pills that can literally destroy their careers and their lives. Nate Jackson had that great op-ed in the New York Times last summer who talked about professional football players who self-medicate. He was a tight end for a number of years. And that was in the paper about the same time that we saw people suspended for the season for using marijuana, and the wife beater was suspended for 2 games. We've got our priorities kind of screwed up here, it seems to me. But you've got an opportunity to help us make a profound difference in this country. Not only because of over 1 million people now who have legal access to medical marijuana and use it, but because we're changing outmoded policies, we are committed to not criminalizing behavior that most Americans think should be legal. We are committed to doing the research necessary to be able to provide the answers that people want. We're committed to fixing a criminal justice system that discriminates horribly against young men of color and has disproportionate penalties, absolutely unreasonable, and then having something that can be an albatross around people's neck, haunting them as they try to secure employment and education. This is wrong. We're going to change it. With your help, and I just admitted to somebody again the prediction. In fact, I made it on statewide radio in New Hampshire, bet a lunch, that in 5 years we'll have turned the corner. We will be treating marijuana like we treat alcohol. States will do what they want. The federal government will stay out of the way. It'll tax, it'll regulate, and it will reform. We'll research, we'll all be better off focusing on real problems. I look forward to continuing to work with you, progress in the years ahead, and to not make a liar out of me about winning this in the next 5 years. Thank you very much.
Congressman Earl Blumenauer at the 2015 Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference in Portland.
From now on, you will speak only when spoken to.
And that sound means it's 4:20 here on the West Coast. Time for us to take a break and get lifted. Hope you have the opportunity to join us, and if not, we are fighting for the day when you will be able to. It's coming sooner than you think. We got Roots Monday when we come back, a great mashup from our good friend Bacon Dan, followed by Judge Jim Gray's Saturday keynote speech.
Hey, what's up, everyone? It's Herb Thrasher, and I've got a bong, and you're listening to 420 Radio.
Imagine life without taxes. Let New Era Certified Public Accountants, NewEraCPAs.com, handle your Cannabusiness 280E and tax strategy. Get your business prepared with New Era CPA's Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. NewEraCPAs.com, with years of experience in the industry, we are one of the nation's leading accounting firms for growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies from Washington to California. NewEraCPAs.com.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details. Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Roots Monday, featuring the blues, country, folk, and jazz music that birthed the modern sounds we enjoy today. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
All right, Monday is upon us, and that means it's time for us to get laid back with some Roots Monday music. We got Bacon Dan on the line, our Mr. Portland. I'm just going to call you Mr. Portland because that's you're it, man. You embody everything that is Portland.
That's such a compliment, man. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. How's things going with Bacon Dan at this point?
Oh, things are going great. Work's going awesome. Life in the karaoke band is also going awesome. I'm actually off tonight, so I will be singing instead of signing people up. And the weather outside, everybody who's listening, you always think, you know, Portland's gray, kind of cold or a little bit rainy. Yes, that's exactly what it is today. The rain is almost here. It's like 60 degrees out, super overcast. I am happy as hell and slightly baked, which makes it even better.
That's right. We have two seasons here in Portland. One is shorts and the other is hoodie. And we are in hoodie season for sure.
Absolutely.
Hey, you know, I just got word through Facebook, and I don't remember whose post it was, but I clicked over, and you know, out on Southeast 82nd where it ends and it hits Killingsworth, there was a strip club out there for the longest time. It's apparently now called the High Society 420 Strip Club.
Really?
Yeah. So I might have to send you there purely for investigative purposes to report for us.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not like I go to strip clubs on a weekly basis with the Who's the Ross team for the after party.
No. That's the thing, is Dan, you'd be able to actually evaluate it fairly. That's what I'm saying. You've been to so many of them.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, tell us about what we got for a tune today here, because I'm thinking this looks like one pretty cool remix.
Yeah, this is, you know, as everybody knows, I spent a lot of my free time just scouring the net, finding good music. And this one, I've got a lot of his music. This is from Mad Mix Mustang. You can just search him on SoundCloud or any number of sites. This is just such a cool thing. I'm actually going to try to talk karaoke from hell into doing this. It is the music track from Jimi Hendrix's Fire with the vocal track of The Doors' Light My Fire.
Mm. Really cool. Love those mashups like that.
Oh, and it works so well. Like, people are going to be like, bopping their heads for this, I can tell you that.
All right, well, let's check it out. This is Mad Mix. Who is this? Mad Mix. Can't see the
Mustang.
Name. Mad Mix Mustang. There we go. Mad Mix Mustang with Let Me Light Your Fire, Jim and Jimmy. Thanks a lot, Bacon Dan. We'll see you soon.
Sounds good, buddy.
You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you,
where we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to stick the night on me. Fire.
Listen here, baby. The step back is so crazy.
The time to hesitate is through. No time to wallow in the mire. Try now, we can only lose. And our love become a funeral pyre.
Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire.
Try to set the night on fire.
That's what I'm talking about. Now dig this. Yeah. Ha. Now listen, baby.
The time to hesitate is through. No time to wallow in the mire. I know we can only live. And my love become a funeral pyre.
Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire.
Try to set the night on fire. You know that it will be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you that we couldn't get much higher.
Yeah.
Try to set the night on fire.
You better move over there.
Try to set the night on fire.
I ain't gonna hurt you, baby.
Try to set the night on fire.
Radio, the activist radio station. At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs, and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics, Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
Based upon my experience, as Anthony said, as a former federal prosecutor, Navy JAG attorney, criminal defense attorney in the Navy, and then as a judge, trial court judge in a pretty conservative county in Orange, it just became apparent to me that what we were doing with regard to our nation's drug policy simply was not working. So as Anthony said, I did something very unusual for a sitting trial court judge, and that is I held a press conference, I don't know of any other judge that's done this, stating my views that in effect we've got to change away from this failed policy because it just isn't working. Thereafter, and that was in April the 8th of 1992, so it's been, my goodness, a long time, 32 something years. Since that time, I've changed my mind. No, I now say, when I talk to Rotary clubs, religious groups, or any other groups, that drug prohibition is the biggest failed policy in the history of the United States of America, second only to slavery. And it is. And I'm going to disagree with Alex. There's no such thing as a lowly activist. It's incumbent on us all, as citizens of our country, to do at least three things. One is to pay our taxes within reason. Another is to not be a voter, but to be an intelligent voter. Look into the issues and be a knowledgeable voter, which is really important. And the third is to make the system work. Look, folks, it's our government, and if it's not working, it's our responsibility to make it better. And so there's no such thing as a lowly activist. You need to stand up for what you believe is right in whatever area that you are interested in. So as you can imagine, and I've been speaking about this publicly for quite a while, some of the introductions I've received are a lot less glamorous than the one you heard here from Anthony. I remember one in particular early on that was quite a bit shorter, and I can actually recite it verbatim. And it was, I know you all want to hear the latest dope from the courthouse, so here's Judge Gray. But now people are beginning to understand from a variety of ways. I talk to Rotary clubs or religious political groups, whatever, now, and say, look, don't listen to what I say. Forget about my experience. Use your own. In fact, tell me in your questions an area that is of interest to you, close to your heart, and I will show you to your satisfaction how it is made worse because of our nation's policy of drug prohibition. And it could be medicinal, it can be educational, it can be healthcare, it can be the environment, criminal justice issues, whatever it is, it's made worse because of drug prohibition. Today, the biggest oxymoron in our world is the term controlled substances. Why? Because as soon as you prohibit something, you give up all of your control to the bad guys. Anything dealing with quality control, which is a huge issue, or place of sale, or price, or age restrictions, you give it up to the bad guys. So I'll tell you my journey. I started just collecting articles, just thinking about this, watching in my own courtroom how we are churning low-level drug offenders through the system for no good purpose whatsoever. You could arrest and even convict a big-time seller of cocaine or whatever in Santa Monica, Costa Mesa, wherever. And does that mean that now cocaine is no longer available? No, it's just an employment opportunity for someone else. So you then look at it really closely and see that we couldn't do it worse if we tried. Because yes, the drugs can be harmful, without question. However, the bigger problem is drug money. The drug money is killing people off in Colombia. In fact, I sat on a plane next to a young lady who came here from Colombia at an early age. And look what it's done to her country. Look what it's done to Mexico. You know, you have these beheadings, for heaven's sakes, and this corruption has nothing to do with drugs whatsoever. It's all drug money that does this. So you get people to begin to understand. I am here to give you a prognostication, a forecast. And that is, in the state of California, we will have on the ballot in 2016 an initiative to regulate and control the sale of recreational marijuana. It's going to happen. And if we do our job anywhere close to right, it's going to pass. It will be a watershed. At that point, I believe that marijuana prohibition virtually nationwide will be over because the federal government will not be able to internalize the loss of the state of California. And then let's go to the answer. And what, you don't find the answer very often in the world, but the answer is the concept of federalism. I go and talk again with people and say, hey, how many people here feel the federal government has all the answers? You don't have anybody raising their hands. So do you believe that as adults in the state of Oregon, that you have the ability best to protect and serve your people here with regard to the issue of drugs and drug prohibition and drug regulation? And they all say yes. So in fact, if Oregon comes up with something that works pretty well and the neighboring state of Idaho comes up with something that doesn't, they might look around and say, well, you know, what we're doing, Charlie, isn't working very, but look what they're doing in Oregon. That works pretty well. Let's gravitate over toward that. Because it's important to try different concepts. We couldn't do it worse if we tried. I promise you, you won't do it any worse than the federal government has. So use your own expertise, use your own background and regulation. Now, I do not favor the legalization of any of these drugs. I don't. But it's a question of concepts, a question of language. We hear these different words. Decriminalization, by the way, means, like in Holland or Portugal, that it's still illegal to buy, use, possess, sell any of these drugs, but as long as you stay within very well-known guidelines, the police are instructed, frequently in writing, not to enforce the law. Well, I'm a judge. I believe in having reasonable laws, and I believe in enforcing those laws, but at least what they're doing is far better than what we are doing. But if you're talking about the legalization of drugs, think aspirin. You know, aspirin is a legalized drug. You can advertise it on the open market. Your 12-year-old daughter can go to your local pharmacy and buy a case of it if she wants to. I don't want that to happen for marijuana or any of these other drugs. Alcohol, which is my drug of choice, no. So I believe in the strict regulation and control of these various drugs, kind of like tobacco, kind of like alcohol. I personally do not want marijuana or any other of these drugs, methamphetamines, whatever, to be advertised where children are going to glamorize them. I don't like that idea at all. By the way, are you familiar with this group called a partner? I have to put my hand over my heart. It's just so close and warming. This Partnership for a Drug-Free America. Do you know who the original sponsors were for the Partnership of a Drug-Free America? The alcohol industry and the tobacco industry. Drug-free indeed. But it's brilliant marketing because they did not want the competition from marijuana. So from a marketing standpoint, they're right on tune. As far as a policy standpoint, it's just diabolical. By the way, do you know who the main sponsor is today of the Partnership for a Drug-Free America? The pharmaceutical industry. Hey, what do you know? Okay, it's money, folks. It's just money. It's money that dictates what this policy is and has been. We're talking huge amounts of money. Soon after I started doing this, we actually had a conference at the Hoover Institute in Stanford University. Milton Friedman was there. Joe McNamara, former chief of police of Kansas City and San Jose, was there. And we had three different conferences and invited chiefs of police to come into this conference from around the country. And as soon as the doors were closed and the public microphones were turned off, even back in about 1994, half of them agreed pretty much with what we were saying. But then they'd look at us, and you need to know this, activists. They would say, I cannot say what I understand and have seen and believe because I have many masters. You know, I have to respond to the city, to the mayor. I have to respond to the city council. I have to respond to the various editorial boards of these local papers. And if I said what I understand, I'd lose my job. So I need political cover. That's where we come in. We have to regulate and control and legalize, as it were, the discussion, because today there is still a prohibition on discussion. And I look back in my time as a judge, and there are still several opportunities in which I remember, hey, there was about four young men, as I understand it, as I recall, that were being sentenced for being under the influence of methamphetamines. In California, it was and still is a mandatory minimum sentence of 90 days in jail for being under the influence of a narcotic or methamphetamines. So they had to give me what we call a factual basis. They had to put into their own words why they were guilty of this offense. And all four, in various ways, said, Your Honor, my drug of choice is marijuana. And I'd buy my marijuana from the same person for years. However, one fine day, they sold me some marijuana laced with methamphetamines. I didn't know it. I smoked it and got hooked. And I keep thinking to myself, you wonder why I'm doing this? I keep thinking to myself, we all know that smoking cigarettes is hazard to your health, but at least when you go to your local mini-mart and buy a pack of Marlboros, you're going to know it's not laced with methamphetamines. This is a drug prohibition problem. So we have to get these words out. Look, when it comes down to it as well, it's a question of liberty. The criminal justice system is really good at holding people accountable for what they do. But they're not good at all, nor should they be, of controlling what we as adults put into our bodies. It makes as much sense to me to put this gifted actor, Robert Downey Jr., in jail for his heroin problem, and so far he's doing pretty well, but he will always have that craving. He's going to have to be careful. But it makes as much sense to me to put Robert Downey Jr. in jail for his heroin problem as it would have Betty Ford in jail for her alcohol problem. It's the same thing, isn't it? It's a medical problem. Bring them closer to medical professionals that can help them instead of labeling them automatic criminals and pushing them farther away. It's simply that question. So it's a question of liberty. It's a question of also doing what works. And it's also a question, by thunder, of getting the federal government and the governments themselves out of our personal lives. Out of our personal lives. They are encroaching upon our freedoms so much. Why? Well, I tell you, big government is really, really good and effective at least one thing, and that is increasing the size, the power, the funding of big government. And they're continuing to get more involved in our lives. The answer is no. The answer is no. What is the soul of the United States of America? There are still people from anywhere around the world that still love America. They still love Americans. They'd give an awful lot to be a part of America. They may not be all that proud and happy of our government. Then again, neither am I. But what makes us special? Why is it that so many people want to come here? And the answer is the soul of our country is our freedoms and our liberties. And today our very soul is under attack by our very own government. And it's up to us to stand up and say, no, this will not happen. I talk with various groups of immigrants, for example, from Russia, from Iraq, from Vietnam. And they look aghast at what is happening now in our country. They fled from governments that intrude. They have that knock on the door and searching without warrants and nighttime raids and people disappearing or being taken into custody without a warrant. And that's what I fled from to come to the United States. And now they look around and see that's where our government is going and no one is saying anything about it. I wrote a book, finally, just I'd gotten so much information that I had to with regard to the war on drugs. It's probably the longest book title you've ever heard of, Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed and What We Can Do About It, A Judicial Indictment of the War on Drugs. And I cited numbers of other judges, even back in 2001 when it was originally printed, commenting about the failed war on drugs. But I have an entire chapter of the erosion of our civil liberties, citing only United States Supreme Court cases involving drugs, how the erosion of our Fourth Amendment against search and seizure has been rampant in our country today. And it's so easy to give up our rights and so hard to get them back. The war on drugs is the biggest reason for our loss of civil liberties probably in our country's history, although the so-called war on terror is now giving that a run for its money as well. But the government emphasizes fear. They keep us in fear. And if you're going to have a war on drugs, that means you've got to vilify the enemy, don't you? And who is it? Oh, it's those hippies. Oh, it's those druggies. Now, I don't use the word hype. I don't use the word, down and out or any of the rest of this stuff. It vilifies people. People are human beings, and they have drug problems. My daughter is bipolar. She's going to turn 40 years old in December. And she told me a while ago that, Dad, the only time I really feel normal is when I'm using methamphetamines. And that's a true problem. It's a true addiction problem. And she's had some problems. She's doing fairly well now, but who knows. But so many other people are as well. Already in this conference, I've heard about three or four different couples, different people, talking about their family problems and exacerbated by the war on drugs. You may remember a fellow by the name of Jeb Bush, who was, as governor of Florida, it was become pretty well known. Of course, he was a political figure, and he had two twin daughters that had, as it was publicly revealed, problems with regard to prescription drugs and addictions. And he came out on the airwaves and said, this is a family emergency. We need treatment and we need privacy. And my heart goes out to him, and he's right. He needed treatment and he needed privacy. But if it's us, we need treatment and we need privacy. But if it's them, they need prison. And guess who the them is? Mostly people of color, mostly the down and out, mostly the people of lower economic areas. And the answer is no, that is not what our country stands for. It does not take a sociologist to go through any jail or prison in our country and see that people of color are vastly overrepresented. The answer is no. We cannot do this. The United States of America leads the world in the incarceration of our people, both by sheer numbers as well as per capita. There's a guy named Jim Webb, who was a Democratic senator from Virginia, and he was seen on the cover of Parade magazine. He's worthy of applause. He was seen on the cover of Parade magazine saying, citing these statistics, and then with the great comment that either the United States of America is the most evil people in the world, or we're doing something wrong. What do you think it is? We need treatment. They need prison. So we need to come back to the fundamental approach of the criminal justice system, and that is hold people accountable for their actions. We're pretty good at that. However, if I were to be selling marijuana illegally, and you come to me with $20 in your hand, and I have a baggie of $20 worth of marijuana, I'm not going to turn you in. I'm not going to arrest you. I'm not going to call the police because you're doing what I want to. You're my customer, and you're not going to turn me in either. And so in order to break that bond, you've got to get down in the gutter if you're in the law enforcement business. In order to interfere between these voluntary transactions, you're going to have wiretap, you're going to have an informant, you're going to have an undercover officer, and then that brings all kinds of problems. The government is not good at controlling what we as adults put into our bodies, nor should they be. It's none of their business. So we get back to that. Talk about Robert Downey Jr., Betty Ford, or whatever. Whatever they put into their body, bring them, if they're causing medical problems for themselves, and they could be, bring them closer to the medical professionals that can help them. But leave them alone otherwise, unless if Robert Downey Jr., Betty Ford, you or I drive a motor vehicle impaired by, you name it, marijuana, alcohol, my drug of choice, methamphetamines, whatever, that's a crime and should be. What's the difference? The answer is now, by my actions, I'm putting your safety at risk. Legitimate criminal justice function. But they have no business controlling what I, as an adult, put into my body. Now, I'm going to fly home tonight. I'm going to have dinner with my wife. And I could drink 10 martinis if I wanted to. Clearly not medically a smart thing to do. Certainly medically harmful. But not a violation of law, nor should it be. So let's get this word out. Marijuana is a viable medicine. Marijuana is a viable recreational drug, and it is used responsibly by virtually everybody. And if they're used irresponsibly to the detriment of other people, bring in the criminal justice system. But otherwise, get out of our lives. No such thing as a lowly activist. And there are just so many other issues as well. I was proud, as Anthony said, to be the vice presidential candidate in 2012. I believed in Governor Gary Johnson, who, you know, I'd been doing this for a while, never heard of him. He was a two-term Republican governor of New Mexico. And I opened up my newspaper in 1999 and found that, hey, who is this governor of New Mexico? He says he is conducted what he called his own audit and determined that the war on drugs is not working and we've got to put our heads together and change it. I thought, wow, he had no political constituency for that, no political benefit. In fact, he took on a whole lot of political problems. He did the right thing for the right reason. So as soon as he started running for president, I started saying, you know, he's the most qualified person to be president I know of. I guess I said it a few too many times, so he asked me to be his running mate, so now what am I going to do? But I just believed in that. We need to bring in responsibility at all levels of our society. And that starts with government. Responsibility movement is what we need to get back to at all levels. Personal, of course. Corporate, absolutely. Government, certainly so. And we need to do this, and we need to do it right away. We're going in the wrong direction in so many areas. You know, our children. Look, you can go into a barrio or an area, and people will understand, basically, that there are only so many Michael Jordans, only so many Kobe Bryants or whatever. So my chances of going into the NBA or the NFL, realistically, are not that good. So we might as well take out billboards for our young people. Hey, you want to make some money? You will never, ever make as much money in your life as you can by selling drugs. We are misleading our youth completely. Gangs. I've seen this in juvenile court. Juvenile street gangs use this as a recruiting tool. Hey, you want to make some money? Join our gang and help be involved to sell drugs. We will cripple really bad organizations by regulating and controlling these various drugs. You know, one of the biggest purveyors, suppliers of methamphetamines are the Hells Angels. Oh, what a nice group. Personally, you may not remember this. It was about 15, 20 years ago that the government of Korea had a ship that they were sending to the West, and it was filled with methamphetamines, and we found it and were able to intercept that shipment. But it so happens, at least in my belief, the sale of illegal drugs funded their whole nuclear policy. It's huge money. So the drugs are here to stay. Tell people that. You know, we've tried to make them illegal, but there's never been Any people that have not had some form of mind-altering, sometimes addicting substances to use, to misuse, to abuse, and maybe even get addicted to, except maybe the Eskimo, because they couldn't grow anything, but now chemistry has changed that as well. So I bring you bad tidings. We've tried to make them illegal. They've always been with us, and they always will. And that means they're going to bring in harms without question. So let's adopt a policy that is to reduce the harms that can and will be caused by these drugs in our communities. And then you start looking at the drug money. You start looking at going into Mexico and these beheadings. Once again, it's not caused with drugs. It doesn't have anything to do with drugs. It's all drug money. And as a practical reality, we could bulldoze the entire country of Colombia, Peru. You can take Mexico with it if you want to. It won't make any difference at all with regard to our illegal drug problems here. Why? Because the reality is, if the demand is here, the demand will be met. If you figuratively have somebody standing on a street corner with a $20 bill in his hand saying, hey, give me $20 of cocaine or marijuana or whatever, somebody will fill that market. And if it's not done by Colombia, Peru, and Mexico, it'll be done by Nigeria or Afghanistan. Or, by the way, California. Do you know what the largest cash crop is today in the state of California? It's marijuana. Number two is grapes, okay? So you realize, hey, if you have this out there, somebody is using it. And we have really harmed ourselves by keeping marijuana illegal. I am completely convinced. I've never smoked marijuana, like we said. I'm completely convinced that medical marijuana is a viable medicine, and it's increasingly being proved. I was one time in Marin County, it's north of San Francisco in California, and was at a medical marijuana clinic, and arbitrarily went up to some young man who was in line for his, as he called it, his medicine. And I introduced myself and said, well, what is your story? Why are you here? He said, well, Your Honor, about 9 months ago, I was involved in a motorcycle collision and did real violence to my spine. So my medical doctor had me so pumped full of narcotics, I was in a haze, I basically couldn't function, and I was having about 5 or 6 seizures a day. That went on for several months until a friend of mine said, try medical marijuana. He said, what do I have to lose? So he did. And since that time, he has weaned himself off all of the narcotics. He's able to live pretty much a normal life, and he maybe has 1 or 2 seizures a week. I think to myself, wow, what are we doing here? So the whole medical marijuana field, and honestly, CBD oil is going to be a medical revolution in our country, I really believe. It will be. Get the word out. And hemp, for heaven's sake. You know, you can make a difference between marijuana and hemp just by definition. You know, let's say a THC of, what, 0.3% or less is hemp. Treat it like cotton. And I was on a radio talk show, this is quite a few years ago, out of Iowa, and a farmer came on and said, well, Judge Gray, I'm going to talk against my, we're talking about ethanol, and I'm going to talk against my own economic self-interest because I raise corn. However, you can get more ethanol from an acre of hemp than you can an acre of corn, and the hemp will not clog your carburetor, but the corn will. And I thought, you know, that's not my field, but the market will figure this out. Why do we have the federal government dictating that, yes, we have to use ethanol in the first place, and it must be used with corn? You know, why? Well, crony capitalism. That's the idea. Have a whole lot of agricultural folks in Iowa, Illinois, or Indiana, or wherever, that want to get this extra market for their crops, which, by the way, has the cost of raising the cost of tortillas and all the rest. Get the market out, or excuse me, get the government out of this. So another secret. We have so much money in government today, don't we? With all of these lobbyists and all of this stuff. And we always will, until you will never get money out of government until you get government out of money. Get the government out of these organizations and you won't have these lobbyists. The big one, of course, is taxes. You know, you look at the complications of this tax system. If we were to go to a flat tax, one that was understandable, simple, straightforward, what would happen? Well, you would lose all these lobbyists because they'd have nowhere to go. If you want to get rid of lobbyists, go to a flat tax, and that'll take care of about 60% of the lobbyists in Washington already. So there's several groups against simplifying our tax system. Who are they? Well, H&R Block is not interested. You know, the tax attorneys, accountants and stuff, they're not. I understand that's our system and that's fine. Others are the people that work for the IRS. Okay, I think we can live with that. But the major powerful group that is against this change is members of Congress. Why? Because today they get enormous political power by voting for tax breaks for their wealthy constituents, and they do not want to give it up. Again, government keeps getting bigger and bigger. You get money out of government by getting government out of money. So these are all things that we can do. Their help is on the way. You need to be revitalized. It's really fun to be able to speak with good activist people. And I'm here to tell you that some of the best people I've ever met in my life, I have met because of my involvement in drug policy reform. Some of them have been to prison. Some of them are still drug addicted. Others are like me that don't use any of these illegal substances, etc. But it's really amazing. Yes, I even speak for LEAP, which is Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And one of the people that actually I helped bring in is the former chief deputy of the Los Angeles Police Department. Not exactly any man's liberal, okay? He's got all the badges and all the guns and everything else. But, you know, from that perspective, nobody can argue with Steve Downing. I mean, he's done there. He's not a liberal. He's not coddling anybody. He just realizes what we're doing isn't working. And so it's been amazing to see. I wouldn't be here speaking with you folks except for my involvement in drug policy reform. It's just an amazing thing. It's a very exciting thing. It's going to be a revolution in our country to get the government out of our lives in this fashion, get the government out of that money, regulate and control these various drugs according to however each state decides how this should happen. I'm going to tell you another couple of stories. I was in juvenile court for a while on the abused and neglected children calendar. And maybe every 5 weeks or so, I would have the following factual scenario come into my court. There'd be a mother, single mother, let's say, of two children, and she'd make a big mistake. Namely, she'd hook up with the wrong boyfriend. And so the boyfriend was out there selling drugs, and she'd basically know it, but that's the way the cards were dealt. So one fine day, he would come to her and say, well, tell you what, Helen, if you'll take this package across town and give it to Charlie, I'll pay you $500 or so. And so she'd think, well, it probably is narcotics, but, you know, I'm going that way anyway, and I could use this for half my month's rent. So she would do it. Okay, so she gets arrested, charged, convicted, and sentenced to, say, 5 years in prison. And unfortunately, in today's world, 5 years in prison for transporting 3 or 4 ounces of heroin is probably not an unrealistic charge. So let me ask you a question. When you incarcerate the mother, what happens to her children? And the answer to that question is easy. She has legally abandoned her children because she's off in prison. So they come to me on the abused and neglected children calendar. So now I have the mother, and she's sitting there in handcuffs and in a jail jumpsuit. And I look at her and tell her the truth, which is, of course, ma'am, you know you're not going to be a functional part of your children's lives for the next 5 years. She starts to well up with tears. Wouldn't you? And then I look at her and tell her the brutal truth, which is, unless you're really lucky and either have a personal friend or family member that's both willing and able to take custody of your children, they're probably going to be adopted by somebody else by the time you get out of prison. And she starts to dissolve.
The most excellent Judge Jim Gray speaking at the Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference. His speech was Saturday, and we'll have these archived up at my SoundCloud page, soundcloud.com/radicalrus. But folks, time flies when you legalize. That's all the time we got for today, but join us tomorrow for another 2 hours of news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. We got some data, we got some opinion, we got some music, we got plenty. Every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific time, replays at 6 p.m., 3 a.m., and 6 a.m. Pacific time. Also, catch all 5 shows replayed on Saturdays, starting at 3 p.m. Pacific time. The entire schedule can be found at 420radio.org/schedule. For everyone here at beautiful legal Potland, Oregon's Rolla J Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.
Welcome, 420 Radio fans, to the Activism Hour.